Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you so much for joining us once again to the Uplifting Us Thursday night Dare to Win call. We're here every Thursday from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. and we always are bringing some vital, essential knowledge for our people all over the planet. And we're here by telephone as well as by internet radio. And tonight we do have another very vital and necessary message and information that will help us to make better decisions and to keep ourselves well. And I am Brother Thurman, an Uplifting Us member, and there's much that we want to cover tonight, including talking about Uplifting Us, a members-only annual convention is coming up in March, and there will be more details about that. And, of course, you do have to be a member, and we will go into how you can go about registering, and which would be at usliftingus.com or www.usliftingus.com. And we will talk more about that later. And once again, the topic is pharma food, pharma spelled with a P, Thanksgiving biotech on your plate. And I'm Brother Thurman, the Uplifting Us member, and joining us by telephone in the studio is Brother Shabaka, also an Uplifting Us member. Brother Shabaka, give us some opening greetings.
Yeah, well, greetings to you, Brother Thurman, and greetings, family. I look forward to our discussion, and it's always a pleasure to be with you on this program and to share.
Wonderful. And so, family, let's get into this very vital topic, pharma food, Thanksgiving biotech on your plate. Brother Shabaka, tell the family about pharma food and how does it relate to what's on our plate?
Hey, thank you so much for that question, Brother Thurman, and it's a topic we usually don't take food. We really take food for granted because we're no longer involved in the agricultural process, and we leave it up to our enemy to supply us. So that becomes an extremely important question, all right, to try to take, and particularly during these holidays where we bring family together and we go out and spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on celebration for holidays that does not necessarily serve our interests. But leading up to that, I want to play a clip for the family. All right, this clip is going to deal with, it seemed like the topic might not be related, but the topic is extremely important, and I'm going to home it in. It deals with weather manipulation, climate changing, climate this and climate that that you hear in the news. But I'm going to play that clip. But let me give a, before jumping into that clip, I want to give a very rudimentary definition of farmer foods, and then I want to play that clip in another, and then we're going to tie it all together. Essentially, farmer food is food or part of a food that provides medical or health benefits, including the prevention and or treatment of diseases. That's supposedly what it's maintained in its definition, because we see the two words coming together, farmer, which stands for pharmaceuticals, and, of course, food, which stands for food. All right? You might also hear the term nutrichemicals, which comes from a combination of the word nutrition and pharmaceuticals. And again, to describe foods or parts of a food that provides medical health benefits. Now, keep that in mind, that it's the combination of pharmaceuticals, medicine, drugs, whatever, combined with foods, all right? And so when we combine these things with foods, we have to ask ourselves what then becomes the characteristics of the food, which we'll get into a little bit later. But let me first share with the family this particular talk that is meant to describe weather. And I want you to hear some words. You'll hear a person who's first initially describing the rocket testing and what that rocket testing is creating. And then after that, you will hear Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson was doing was the vice president and became president after the assassination of John F. Kennedy. So Lyndon Johnson is making a presentation in 1962, all right, before the Harvard graduates, and he's describing some things. So let's first hear this introduction from this other guy, and then we'll hear Lyndon Johnson. This is Lyndon Johnson in 1962 at Harvard graduation.
World's cloud clear. And ultimately, to control the weather, and he who controls the weather will control the world. The president, upon my recommendation, the chairman of the Space Council sent a message to the Congress 2 days after we got back. He said that he was sending it and asked me, says, do you think that the timing of it is about right? And I said, yes, I think the timing is very excellent. But when I came to this town 30 years ago, And President Roosevelt had something that really meant a lot to the people. He would take that message and he would walk down Pennsylvania Avenue himself and look straight in the eyes of that Congress and give it to them in person. And the president said he thought that was a good idea. He did. And as a result, I think the people in the Congress are going to support it. And that message calls for new frontiers, new vision. It calls for us taking the steps now that will make us no longer second in space and in size. It lays the predicate and the foundation for a space communication satellite that will permit the people of the world will see one television program at the same time throughout the world. Think about that kind of communication and think about the opportunity that will provide. It lays the predicate and the foundation for the development of a weather satellite that will permit man to determine the world's cloud layer and ultimately to control the weather, and he who controls the weather will control the world.
All right, let me stop there. I think that you're beginning to get a little bit clear on what I'm trying to present. What he's talking about, you know, Kennedy, they were in competition with the Russians, all right, in an exploration to see who could be the first to reach the moon. At least that was the propaganda that was coming on. But he goes into detail particularly about what it was meant, the establishment of a communication network. And I remember when I was in the military and I was traveling in the mid to late 60s. And everywhere we went, we could hear Voice of America at the same time, okay? Well, that was because they had satellites that were already deployed and that could be able to transmit, all right, particularly to so-called communist countries, all right, Voice of America, propaganda, all right? And so in addition, he says, along with that, they'll be able to determine also the cloud patterns, all right, and be able to control the cloud patterns such that that would be able to, all right, begin to control the climate of the world. All right, now, what significance is that to us, particularly in this conversation that we're having? Well, keep in mind, you might not know it, but since 1940s, there's always been a science surrounding climate change. Really, it's really climate manipulation, or rather global atmospheric manipulation, which impacts the climate that we are experiencing. All right? And so when the Vice President Lyndon Johnson gave their speech about control, it probably went over the heads of a lot of people. And a lot of people thought that they was firing these rockets, testing these rockets in order to get to outer space so they could jump to the moon. Yeah, right. All right, but it was the military that initiated this action. The military is not interested in going and finding minerals on the moon. Their emphasis is military advantage in war. And so anything that they have is to weaponize such that that gives them a military advantage if there's a particular conflict. And so what we have, all right, from that speech is the control of the climate. And what does that do? Now, you know the significance of the cloud coverage because, number one, that provides rain, which is necessary for crop cultivation and harvesting. All right, so rain is extremely important in agriculture. In addition to that, we know that without rain, you know, you experience what? Droughts, too much rain, floods, droughts, and after a long period of time, famine, too much rain, and atmospheric conditions can create hurricanes, all right, typhoons, you know, which is the same thing. And so we see a number of things now with the technology that they have today, even beaming energy rays towards certain fault joints in the crust of the earth, you might be able to experience something that a potential energy accumulation, which could possibly create a hurricane, an earthquake. And we know that sudden earthquakes that had happened in the recent past, Haiti, Turkey, Morocco, and what have you, Nepal, and what have you, leads us to suspect that maybe these were not natural phenomena, but these phenomena that had happened really was engineered by people who had the technology to create them. And there's a lot to be said about that. There's a number of theories out. Papers that have produced that have not produced the kind of information to substantiate that and then hold people accountable if that, in fact, is true. So what I was trying to say is that, one, if you control the weather, all right, which affects the climate that we are experiencing, where it deviates, all right, from its normal pattern, all right, that means that you have the capabilities of weaponizing it and using it to your force to affect farming, agriculture, herding, any of those things that I mentioned before, famine, the creation of famine, droughts, and what have you. All of that impedes normal agricultural production. And keep that in mind, normal agricultural production. And I think you all have seen the rise in prices of food these days. And I think during the so-called plandemic, you saw that there were some scarcities of some food products when you went to the market. Now, I want to also play for you, but I want you to hold that thought. Control of climate affects agriculture, all right, and other things. And if you control that, you can control the weather pattern. You don't necessarily have to have a machine gun in order to outdo your enemies. Now, I want to also play. That was in 1962. I want to play another clip by a man by the name of Dennis Meadows. He's a scientist, and he was being interviewed, and this was in 1972. All right? But I want you to get I'm only going to play a little bit of it because it was a little long, but I'm only going to play a little bit of it because I want you to get and listen to him deeply. His words, you know, he's white, European, you know, and you got to listen carefully because, you know, how they pronounce words is not necessarily how we pronounce words sometimes, but if you listen carefully, I think you can get the gist of what he's trying to say.
It would be a big revolution to bring companies and governments to really give importance to a long term. That would be a revolution. In some ways, it would be quite simple, and there are easy things to do and hard things to do. I think it's just an example, an easy thing to do. Now, at least in the United States, we reward senior executives by the price of the stock in the company. Even every quarter or every year or when they leave the company, they are rewarded according to the price of the stock, which gives them very bad incentives because they reduce expenditures on research, for example, in order to or they fire a lot of people in order to reduce their costs, because that gets a short-term profit. But we could easily say, we will reward you by the value of our stock 5 years after you go. So you have to, before you leave, you have to make sure that you left the company in a situation so that 5 years from now it's going to be successful.
Brother Shabaka.
Well,
yes, sir.
I don't expect trying to avoid collapse. I'm not sure what it would look like.
He's talking about economic collapse in the U.S.
scenarios.
This is in 1972.
It's not normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, some sort of volcano can blow up tomorrow in Indonesia, which reduces the agricultural output of the planet by 40 or 50% for 5 years. How do we know that could happen? It has happened several times in the past. So usually speaking, something which happened in the past could happen again, generally. So that could happen. Or epidemics. I mean, I don't know what it means. But in one way or another, we are so far, globally, we're so far above the population and the consumption levels which could be supported by this planet that I know in one way or another it's going to come back down. So I don't hope to avoid that. I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way. Peaceful. Peace doesn't mean that everybody's happy, but it means that conflict isn't solved through violence, through force, but rather in other ways. And so that's what I hope. That we can, I mean, the planet can support something like 1 billion people, maybe 2 billion, depending on how much liberty and how much material consumption you want to have. So with more liberty and more consumption, you have to have fewer people. And of course, you can have more people. And we can even have 8 or 9 billion, probably, if we have a very strong dictatorship, which is smart. But unfortunately, we never have smart dictatorships. They're always stupid. So, but if you had a smart dictatorship and low standard of living, we'd have but we want to have freedom and we want to have a high sense. So we're going to have 1 billion people. And we're now at 7, so we have to get that down.
All right, so he's saying now in the 7 billion. That was 7 billion back there in the 1970s when he made gave this presentation. All right, I only bring that up because we just finished hearing Lyndon Baines Johnson 10 years earlier talked about using weather, all right, to control the cloud formation to control the world. All right, and we know that the importance of water. All right, if you can affect the importance of water, you can help create droughts where it would normally not be droughts, and that would definitely impact your food production. He's saying, you know, he's an intellectual. This guy is an intellectual. He's trying to rationalize out, you know, the need for reducing the population from 7 billion, that was what it was then, it's 8 billion now, all right, to 1 billion where he says, it would be manageable. I want you to think about that. All right. This was in 1972. He mentions that. In 1962, Lyndon Johnson, vice president then, all right, went to the Harvard graduation and was telling them how to control the weather and that that would allow for global control. All right. Control the world. All right, so now we're talking about 60 years, all right, and the thought of it was back there in the 1940s, all right, which goes, all right, 80 years or plus. I'm trying to say that people have been planning to control almost 100 years, and we know how often we plan or make plans. Next month, next week, all right, all right, if that long. But these are people who are planning decades in advance, all right, and they're telling you what they're planning it for. Now, we weren't around. We were busy, you know, trying to get you know, human rights, get the civil rights legislation gone. We wanted to get that done because we have been exploited and deprived of our rights to use the vote as a means of acquiring power. All right. And of course, we wanted the conditions in our community to be reversed. And so that was the emphasis on our mind. But in the same light, the people on the other side of the track was planning how they're going to sustain control. And I want to mention this because, you know, oftentimes, and I would like our people who, you know, really push the, you know, the capitalistic argument, you know, of combating, that they need to really push the argument that capitalism is only used as a measure to control. It's not, you know, not they look at it as the development economic systems, you know, elevating like it has no control, that people use its systems to control people. All right. Yes, they want to profit from it, but they need, in order to profit, they need to control. All right. And if you don't have that control, you know, your profitability may be suspect. It may not exist. So I wanted to have Meadows talk about his eugenics, because, you know, he's talking about reducing the population, but he would like it done peacefully. He's an apologist. Yeah, go ahead, brother.
No, I'm just deeply appreciating what you're bringing to us, and you continue on, brother. This is very vital knowledge.
Thank you very much. I want the family to understand, you know, I try to bring out stuff, and Brother Morgan does, Thurman, I'm sorry, does the same thing when he talks consistently about the need for us to do and do our own farming. And you'll see why, you know, as we proceed with this conversation. All right, but I wanted to bring up that there's people out there who have planned these things. They may not be around right now, but they planned it, and they planned it for the next generation of people to carry it on. And now what we see in this next generation, all right, are people using it, all right, to carry on. So we want to make sure that you are aware of that, and if you are aware of that, and then you can begin, all right, to appreciate some of the things that we need to try to do. I want to bring this thing, now I want to bring it a little bit home to the farmer food. But before we get to talk about the farmer food, I want you to listen to Dr. Joseph McCullough. All right. He has always raised a campaign against synthetic foods. But he'll tell you why, because he goes in it a little bit more deeper than other folks. And, again, I want to remind you, Joseph McCullough is a European. He's doing this to uplift those European Americans who are dissatisfied with the control of their elites, all right, and that they are, you know, being harmed as well. He's not speaking to us. It's for us to get information that he have researched, analyze that information, and share it with the rest of our people, because he's not speaking to us. I just want to make that clear. So when you see me use him, it's not using him to praise. I praise him that he's trying to do the best he can for his people, but I'm going to take the information that he used, because I probably would not be sitting in the same audience as Dr. McCullough. But listen to what he says.
Had to explore purchasing some land for a health community we're looking at developing, and had to do some international travel. So, you know, I apologize for not being there live with you. But the reason that I'm doing this is we know that there's an impending crisis coming. Great reset. Food is going to be a real issue. It's always an issue, but it's going to become even more so. Now, the globalists that are...
He lives in Florida.
They have had a monopoly on food for a long time, and their intention is to make that even grow and become more so. They started this process with the GMO seeds, and of course the primary purpose of a GMO seed is to facilitate the integration and the use of glyphosate, a very potent, deadly herbicide, that Dr. Stephanie Dennis, who is on this channel, is explored in great detail in his actually written book.
Okay, I'll bring him back in a minute, but I wanted to get clear on what he was trying to report. All right, he's been a strong opponent of the herbicides and pesticides that's been added to food. Now, I want you to think of that. These are companies whose objective is to make chemicals, all right, spray them over plants, all right, to repel pests, bugs, rodents, what have you, all right, and also to repel weeds, okay, all right, and so so he's been a proponent, against such spraying, because these plants absorb those pesticides, and I know you know that, you heard of some of the things that's coming out over the years, and that we eat those, all right, which is why they come up with organic stuff, because the organic stuff is natural fertilizers that they use in order to help gain, and that they don't use this other stuff. Well, anyway, he's been a pioneer in that area for the last, you know, several decades, and he lives in Florida, so he sees a lot going on in the Florida milieu. Let me let him say a couple more things. Okay, seems like we didn't have no sound. All right, it seems like I can't get the sound working. But anyway, one of the things that he talks about, you know, is GMOs, genetically modified organisms. Now, what the GMO organism do is that, instead of spraying, all right, for example, let me give you a very good example. Let's say that you have weeds. You know, weeds is like cancer. The weeds will absorb a lot more nutrients, making it very difficult for the plant in the ground, all right, to come to maturity and so that you can harvest, all right? And they actually help to kill the plant, help them not to develop, all right? And so what the scientists do at these certain industry is that they will manipulate genes within the plant such that, all right, the crop that is grown will become resistant, all right, to the herbicide or pesticide that you use. And then as a consequence of that, you know, you won't have to worry about, it'll kill the weeds, but it will not kill the plants. All right. But that means then that what is there is inside the plant and you consume it. So I'm hoping that you're beginning to get a little bit of the picture when we start talking what we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, pharma food, which is the bringing together of pharmaceuticals and food products, all right, manipulating those such that the medicine or so-called or the pharmaceutical is inside of the plant, and then we eat the plant, okay? And so he's given the forerunner of that with these GMO, all right, genetically modified organisms, in this case plants, all right, such that it will repel certain pesticides or herbicides. All right, it would repel and be resistant to them, but it might not necessarily be resistant to you. All right, so we begin to see more of the picture. One, we see that a plan was laid out decades ago, all right, talking about manipulating the climate, the weather pattern, all right, and now the propaganda is to try to make it appear, all right, that, you know, running cars, and cars do have an effect. I mean, remember now, we run, there's a lot of emissions in the air, particularly CO2 created from this, you know, with the catalytic converters now, making CO2 come into the air. And so there is a lot of that coming into the air where it wasn't coming in, you know, 100 or 150 years ago. But remember now, that's what trees are for. trees take CO2, it breathes in CO2, and it exhales or breathe out, however its mechanism for exchange of gas, all right, oxygen. All right, so we need the plants around, we need the trees around, which absorbs, all right, which absorb the CO2. All right, they don't necessarily tell you that. They make it seem like that process is somehow stand still. We get an accumulation of CO2, and if we get that, that's going to change the gas mixtures in the air, making it difficult for us to sustain ourselves as human beings because we breathe mostly oxygen, although we breathe a portion, not all of the air is composed of oxygen. Only a third of it, I think, is composed of oxygen. But we absorb the oxygen that's in the air, and we absorb other gases that's in the air, too. But and that's harmful. And then our body process, all right, converts that stuff such that what we exhale is CO2, which is then taken up by the plant. All right, so he goes on to talk about more dangerous is the things that we put in our body, which is consumed in our system, transmitted, all right, by the blood system networks that goes to all the cells in our body, and eventually what happens is that as a consequence of that, we get poison. Now, I also want to bring up this really goes into the pharma products that we talk about. Again, remember now, the pharma products is the joining together of pharmaceuticals, which are supposed to be medicine, and food products. Now, there's a lot of regulatory apparatus that is supposed to take place as a consequence of joining pharmaceuticals with food, but we know that is no more so than avoiding those regulations as a consequence of what happened during COVID. I mean, the safety of the drugs that were vaccines that were supposed to be produced were never had safety tested, all right? And then they lied and they hid the data. And now there's tons of lawsuits out there. I know that you might not necessarily be aware of them, but there's many lawsuits out there on the procedure, all right, that happened, you know, in the last 3 to 4 years as a consequence of what the pharmaceuticals done. And the intent they got the intent, as they say, was intentional, but now they are hiding under a cloak of immunity. Immunity. I'm sorry, because their claim is that we can't make any money if we're gonna have to be subject to lawsuits every time that somebody gets harmed. All right, so they worked out and made a deal with the government that they would not be subject to lawsuits. But if they are intended, if the consequence of what they produce, they intended for harm to be created, or they knew harm would be created from their products but didn't tell the regulators and definitely didn't tell the public, then they could be sued. And that's why there's a lot of lawsuits out there trying to get at Pfizer and Moderna, because they're the two companies in which their products have created the most harm. And it's really damaging to see the globalness of this situation, because the media has been silent. Countries have been laying down, which means their leadership has been paid off, all right, and deals have been made. The only people that don't know what's going on are us, and us in particular. But anyway, let me try to see if I can get the this conversation that was going on between a woman by the name of Catherine Austin Fitz. She used to be under Bush 1 administration, the Assistant Secretary of HUD. She's also on with Carolyn Betts, who is her attorney of the corporation that she now chairs. All right, and another woman by the name of Van Hamlin, who is from the Netherlands, who is a reporter and reported some very astonishing things. Now, the only reason I'm bringing up this is because this is happening in Europe. It's happening in Holland, and Holland has a good relationship with the U.S., as well as most of the European countries, particularly Germany, U.K., and the U.S. And so if those things are happening there, you know very soon they can be, you know, happening here if they haven't happened already. Let me see if we can bring this conversation in.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Financial Rebellion. Carol is back in Ohio. I'm in Pennsylvania, and we have a very special show for you today. We're going to be talking about pharmacy with Elke von Hamelin, who is one of the leading journalists in the Netherlands. She's coming to us live from the Netherlands. I live in the north of the Netherlands. And Elke had a very successful career in the corporate sustainability world, and we want to get it very wrong. And she transitioned to journalism and has been doing an extraordinary job, among other things, covering food. And she's written two blockbuster reports. The first is Pharmacy, the second is The Dutch Farmers and Fishermen, which we also be talking today. We published it as a subscriber only wrap up in this Larry report, but we've been trying to also get the message out. I constantly tell people, you know, we thought also when we published this that it would not be a popular topic and wrap up, and when we were in the Western Press Conference in Kansas City and then in Savannah, we finished in both Carolyn and I were there, what we discovered is the fresh food people who are trying to support their families and their friends into going local with fresh food, so the best marketing device they've ever had. Anyway, so... Right. So what is Pharmacy? Pharmacy is a label created by Elson to describe synthetic food, but particularly lab-grown meat. And this is a major in-depth report, many links and a wealth of sort of the best sources to describe what is happening in the creation of synthetic food. Elson, you may not realize this.
Yeah, now she talks about lab-grown meat. That is also another aspect of pharma foods. All right, if you go through it, there's a lot of tons of information on pharma foods. Just go to your favorite search engine, put the word pharma, P-H-A-R-M-A, like pharmaceutical, and food right next to it. All right, and then, you know, begin to go through the literature. Some are favorable, some are, you know, talks about, you know, conspiracies to contaminate our food system, and they say that, and some of them talks about reduction in the world population because these food systems are not tested. They're not safety tested. All right, but we know that, well, something is going on, but anyway, she's going to tell you a little bit about her experience. This is Elke von Hamelin, who's going to tell you a little bit about her experience in Holland. And we can extrapolate that, you know, in the Western world, these things are made to come.
Climate change tomorrow. In the United States, you may still be said the other day that we needed the farmers to go extinct. Right. So to me, if the farmers go extinct and we lose our local food system, we're all going to be eating pharma food. And it's very important for people to understand the vision of what they have planned for. So why don't we start by you explaining how you got interested in pharma food, how you got the courage to deep dive this stuff and write it, and what you found.
Well, thank you, Catherine. So I write for the Andere Krant, which is a 100% reader-funded independent newspaper in the Netherlands. And I found this little press release that the Dutch government was investing $60 million into cellular agriculture, which is lab-grown meat, or to build an ecosystem. So my editor-in-chief said, yeah, you can write something about that. And I started reading. and I got so many questions. So my last assignment as a sustainability consultant was for a biotech company. So I was very familiar with the production process of a biotech medicine and also how difficult and expensive it is. And so they were saying they were going to produce a product with a margin of a hamburger.
All right, now what you hear, she's saying that, you know, she had an assignment, you know, and she found that biotech companies, all right, basically pharmaceuticals, all right, were interested in the production of food, particularly meat, all right, and Europeans, well, U.S. too, all right, are heavily involved in consuming meat. We have people that are vegetarians or vegans are here. All right, but still the majority of people in this country, Europe, many parts of the world, are still consumes large quantities of meat. All right, but they don't consume the kind of meat that is being done as the meats that are being injected with pharmaceutical products as here. Now, she got interested in this. One of the reasons she got interested in this was, and she said that they're trying to put ground up insects and make flour and then use those as part of food lunching. Okay, now I mean that's pretty serious. This is in the Netherlands, as she said. They grounding up insects, all right, making powder or flour from those ground up, and then making food products as a result of that. She gets into that, but because of the sake of time, I don't want to, you know, prolong this. All right, in addition to that, she's saying that the government is trying to discourage farming. Now you have to say, now, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you be discouraging farming, okay, if you're making meat products, and let's say you're making meats, if you're growing produce, you know, you're growing produce, why would you be discouraging that, all right? So, and particularly the costs associated, which the pharmaceutical experimentation would have you going into the labs, you know, trying to mice together, all right, pharmaceutical products, chemicals, all right, and make them suitable with the chemical formations of plants and animals, that's extremely costly. But remember I said earlier that the activity of the elites is not necessarily always aimed at making money as much as it is to control, all right? And if you control the weather, all right, you control food production, all right? If you control food production, then you control the world, all right? Because we need, all right, we need water and we need food as fueling agents, all right, in order to consume, all right, and then in order to do whatever the type of work that we have to do. If we don't have those products, all right, then we have to mercy those people who can provide those for us at whatever cost it is for us. So she talks about that, and she goes out and lay out in very detail of the process of what they do to make these lab meats is what she calls them, injected with pharmaceutical. And I had to hold my stomach in her, you know, talking about cell lining, getting lining from fetuses. These are animal fetuses. But they can't use any animals. They was using rats, raccoons, and with all this. But they didn't think that would go over with the public, you know, because you still had some legislation that said you had to inform the public what the products were made of. All right, so then they got the cell lining of cows or pigs. All right, but it was only the cancerous cell lining because you know cancer cells multiply very fast, and they needed a speedy. All right, they needed a speedy processing that couldn't take long as a normal cell would take. It had to be repeated fast, all right, reproduced very rapidly. All right, so if you went through that, you know, you could almost puke when you heard her description of it. And so now, when you go through some of the stores, I know I went through Whole Foods, I've seen Impossible Meats and all this other kind of stuff. It just looked like blurred meat, reddish, and what have you. All right, now you have an idea of the process that was used in order to make that. Well, I don't eat that meat, all right? All right, but they're injecting animal proteins inside of plants, all right? Keep that in mind. They're injecting animal protein inside of plants, which is one of the things that was talked about by her as she did her investigation. She's in the Netherlands, but now right now we see these products popping up here in the United States. We don't know all that's going on because that's not part of our job. Our job is whatever we were trained for and to focus on that. If we get news about anything else, then we have to take that news and see if it's important enough for us to act on. And I'm saying it's very important for us to act on. Well, brother, let me stop here, man. I know I've been talking long just to see if anybody have any questions or if you have some questions, because there's a lot to go. I may have to come back and do another part of this because what I discovered will blow your mind.
Well, brother, I want to thank you, and I want to thank you speaking for the listening audience by telephone and by internet radio. And I feel very confident that the listening audience is just like me. I don't really want to ask any questions because you're providing such necessary information. And you said it very well a minute ago that you need to come back, and you do need to come back. You know, if you came back and spent 5 hours, it probably wouldn't be enough. So I want to thank you, and there's nobody that's got their hand up because I'm certain that they're doing just like me, just taking this in. And we thank you, Brother Chewbacca, as always. And we definitely want you to come back and continue with the time that we've got left to finish your message.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Well, family, I want you to listen. If you want to call, please call. If you got a question, if you got additional information that reinforces mine or that counters mine, that's okay. You can enlighten me, but this is based on the investigation that I did, all right? And like I said, we're not involved in this. Unfortunately, we've been grown up, and when I say we, I'm talking about black people, African people. We've been indoctrinated, all right, to always try to do the best we can in school so that we can get that degree and get a job from the man. We get that job, and particularly now, what happens now? You know what happens now. You have huge financial debt as a consequence of loans that you took out in order to go to school. Well, that debt is held over you so that when you come out and you get a job, you know, that debt is held over you. Sometimes your employer may forgive it, and sometimes not. The government wants to be paid, all right, or whoever wants to be paid that gave you that loan so that you could educate yourself. So we're handicapped because we don't want to make waves. So our educated elite, all right, oftentimes is blackmailed not to make waves even though they can see the bankruptcy in the system because, number one, they was educated, they get an education, they go out, all right, to the suburbs, you know, get a house, 2-car garage, and you know the tune, all right, but never known that they had to be able to sacrifice their legs in order to promote travesty that they know is wrong. And so this is the population you got, but you got some people that are, at least the people that we listen to, they're self-employed. They employ themselves. So they have some liberty, all right, to be able to investigate and not be intimidated because the white people, you know, get intimidated like, too. They have the same kind of bills and stuff like that, too. But you do have a large group of folks that are entrepreneurs, much more so than ours, proportionally saying, all right? And then they have skills and they have resources, access to resources to see how to manipulate the structure so that they're not as harmed as we are. And we're still scared. All right, now how do we overcome this scaredness? In a few minutes, I'm gonna suggest how we can overcome this. One of the reasons that they can harm us is because they have the information and they lie. All right, they lie about what they're doing. They don't tell you that they're doing. In fact, we got a lot of people now talking about, you know, climate change. Usually climate changes of climate, they've been able to look at this scientifically, happens over, you know, thousands of years. It's not something that happens in the lifetimes of a person. Sure, there are some weather patterns that may change as a consequence of something acute, all right? But, you know, climate change is something that is graduated over a many lengthy period, all right? So what we are experiencing now is weather manipulation in order to be able to succumb to the propaganda message to be scareful of what they claim is a climate change, and they associate that you're going to die. That's the one thing they want to say, that climate is going, the change in the climate is going to happen, and you're going to die. All right, and so we get fearful, not knowing that if we die, so are the billionaires. Well, the billionaires are trying to integrate with AT electronics so that they can sustain their lives. I mean, I really need to come back and tell you about how the billionaires, where extremely wealthy folks, are trying to prolong their lives. Some of them are not really even interested in passing their lineage down or legacy down to their descendants. They want to stay around for as long as they can. And obviously, if they want to stay around as long as they can, they're not giving the science permission to destroy the world, all right, by climate change. We got to think about that. But see, our people are not in those areas where we have the information, all right, or if we are in those areas where we can get the information, we get scared and we don't say the information. What can we do? All right. You know that ULU, all right, is a cooperative entity. One of the reasons that many people are scared are because they're not organized around principles that is meant to be long-lasting and to sustain your health. We have our structure now is to allow for various economic activity throughout the country and throughout the black world, all right, where we are, to organize them so that we have family-centered cooperatives, family-centered, all right. As you begin to develop the family structure, and that family structure, all right, develop the cooperative industry necessary to sustain the environment, and what must be partial of that sustaining is agriculture. Agriculture. We must be able to feed ourselves, and we must be able to develop the scientists to neutralize any of those chemical additives that's been added to the soil that destroys plant and human life. And we have the capabilities of doing that. But you got to be organized to do that. And you have to not only be organized, you must be able to accumulate the resources necessary, all right, to sustain that operation. Only ULU that I have seen have that capability and has that model, all right, in its structure. If you need to know more, you need to go to the site, all right, usliftingus.com, read the message, and then go back in the back office. Once you become a member, you can go back in the back office and then see the literature that's there that tells you how we can manage this thing, down to the organizing of UBCs, ULU-based communities, all right, all right, and then from those ULU-based communities, bringing up ULU, all right, investment clubs. See, it's the investment clubs that will, where you begin to accumulate and bring together the resources, financial resources, that you need, all right, in order to invest in buildings, businesses, I'm sorry, that sustain and be able to purchase the land, to buy the land, all right, and to begin to get involved, you know, in education, beginning involved in setting up community centers that helps to furnish and supply that education, all right, and let people know about what is going on. See, it's the lack of information that hinders us. Now, I got access to this information, but now if large numbers of people are getting access to the information, investigating that information, and sharing that information, can you think of how much powerful it would be? Well, you got to have a mechanism, you got to have an organism that is able to be able to transmit that information. And that's what I think the development of ULU is trying to do. And so we can go on. I need to talk more on this, and hopefully Brother Thurman will bring me back, and we can talk a little bit more, and I can go in a little bit more details than what I've gone in now. Thank you, Brother Thurman, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka, and absolutely no doubt about it. We don't have to ponder whether or not to. We absolutely want you to come back as soon as possible because we need this kind of information. We need to be on a regular basis striving to have clarity and break away from the confusion that's been presented to our minds and bodies. And family members by telephone and by internet radio, we thank you so much, and we're here every Thursday from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. And Brother Shabaka has the willingness and the knowledge, the intent, and the love. And he will be back with us again, and we thank you so much for being on the line, and we thank you so much for taking notes just like I am. We need this information. And don't forget that this is aired on Blog Talk Radio, and this will be archived in the next day or two, that it will be made available. Just keep this date, and the title is Pharma Food, Thanksgiving's Biotech on Your Plate. Look it up on Blog Talk Radio by that title and this date, which is November the 23rd, 2023. And replay this and make sure you pass it on to your family and friends. The people need to know this information. Once again, Brother Shabaka, we thank you so very, very much, and we look forward to you coming back to be with us, and we'll be back and strive again. In the meantime,
thank you, brother.
Family, you're welcome, brother. In the meantime, brothers, sisters, and brothers, get your rest. We need that rest as part of our wellness so we have mental, spiritual, and physical clarity. And so take a stroll out to the Garden of Peace with Lonnie Lifton Smith.